So welcome everybody who's arrived. It's now just 6:30, so people will be joining us for the talk. Tonight we have Chrissy Mahoney, and Chrissy is is an actor with a long and successful career in the performing arts, whether it's theatre, whether it's television or films. Chrissy's also worked as a conflict resolution in conflict resolution with individuals and organisations, and is currently based in Melbourne, Australia. Tonight, Chrissy's going to be talking on the theme of managing emotions more effectively. Not that we shouldn't have emotions, but how to manage them more
Yes.
effectively. And so handling emotions, accepting them, and then shifting. If there's something you're uncomfortable with, how to shift it. And then finally, how to boost your emotions to be positive and your emotional well-being. So I'm going to hand over to Chrissy right now. And Chrissy, it's over to you. We will be take after 40 minutes, the questions will be coming in through the Q&A link, and I will be back to ask you the questions after your short meditation. So thank
Okay.
you. Over to you, Chrissy.
Thank you, Artie. Thank you. And lovely to meet you all. And wish I could see your faces be in the same room with you where we could all sit together share this extraordinary conversation. Emotions is such a loaded word. It's where would we be in our life without emotions? Although sometimes when we refer to someone as overly emotional or oh, she's so emotional, it's a pejorative, it's a bit of a put down. And so sometimes we tend to feel that being emotional or emotions are a negative thing. But they are so important in the whole human palette, in the beautiful picture of what it is to be human. I've got my scarf on here because it's cold. It's early in hours of the morning, and we're just coming out of winter. So forgive me, you're probably all in the middle of beautiful summer warmth there. But anyway, this whole aspect of emotion is so important to us as human beings to really connect with each other, to know each other, to sense each other. I don't know if any of you have experienced meeting someone who is seemingly unemotional. But they can be very cold. It's really difficult to have a relationship of any kind with someone who is unemotional. It can even lead to a bit of a psychopathic tendency when people have no feelings. So we're not talking here about managing our emotions so that we are completely in control. For myself, I think I'd rather be an overly feeling, overly emotional person than none at all. So I think the interesting word here I was thinking about when Artie asked me to speak on this is the word managing. And I think managing can have nuances around, well, does it mean that I harness them, that I contain them, that I box them in, and I, or is it really observing and utilizing the emotions in a positive, constructive way? And how can we do that when a situation can be so emotive? It can bring up so much from the past. There's so much to research on the internet about emotions, and I avoided doing that because I thought, no, I really have to search inside myself and understand what I've experienced emotions as. And I think that is one of the key secrets and the keys to the door of emotion, to to harnessing our emotions in a positive way, it's all about knowing yourself, and that's what any of our lives come back to. A journey of a life is the journey back home to the self, is knowing the self, who am I? And in that bigger picture is this extraordinary element of emotion. I think I have learned a lot from meeting extraordinary people in my life, especially through my profession as an actor. I've met some amazing people, and also through conflict resolution, through my studies as a mature age student, there were some wonderful people from all over the world who had come to Australia to study conflict resolution, and amazing people. But I think my greatest teacher has been myself. And so to observe my emotions, especially as a feeling person that I am, and I get very much affected by how others are. Well, I did more so, especially when I was younger. My own emotions were one challenge, my own feelings, but the emotions of other people really, really tended to rock my little boat. How others were with me, had a huge impact. And so it's this whole getting to know what is too much for me, what can I not manage or control or harness here. And when emotions are an interesting thing, when we're in the cinema and there's something very emotional happening on the screen, in the cinema, in the darkness of the cinema, you can express emotions much more easily and much more naturally than with permission. Like you can cry or go, oh no, or, oh, and have all these reactions, but on public transport, those same emotions may not be appropriate. So it's a lot of it is around social regulation, is how I am in public or how I am with others, and how do I manage my emotions once the door is closed. My emotions may have a life of their own. And so usually for me, and I can only talk about myself here, for me, when my emotions are rising up and gaining momentum and gaining energy, I usually get some experience of being a bit out of control or a bit vulnerable in the situation. And my mind starts racing, and the racing mind is like a rolling stone that gathers moss. It gathers more and more and more energy as the mind races, and then the body has a physical response to that. And then once the body starts having a physical response, that's when it almost gets out of my hands. And I think it's a human response. It's a way of trying to understand what is happening around me and to me, is this emotional reaction. Now, I questioned also when I was thinking about this topic with myself, I thought, how much of our emotions are also learnt when we are growing older as children in a family environment? Do we adapt and adopt the emotions of those around us? We observe, because we're all voyeuristic. We learn in this life by watching, by experiencing, by learning how to survive in the environment around us and the people around us. So we can very easily learn and pick up through observation, especially the emotions of our parents, of our siblings, of the influential people around us. And later in life, we can often find ourselves reacting in a similar way to my family or my parents or my culture. This is how I react. For instance, in the Asian culture, the culture tends to be more emotionally contained, which can create some form of emotional conflict between cultures, because we have to learn to understand what the emotional dialogue is with different cultures. So in the Asian culture, say like Japan or China, or they have a way of monitoring and containing the emotion, because to be seen as too emotional in public is to be undignified or dishonorable. And so as a Western person trying to, you know, find a way in, to segue into having, into creating some connection or relationship, it can be quite disconcerting. So we have definitely learnt behaviours according to our culture, our family of origin, our influences around us, the associations that we have as we're getting older, even when working in a corporate environment or a working environment, we tend to observe what is acceptable and what isn't in this environment. So we again hone our emotions. So as much as it is an appropriate thing quite often to contain our emotions, it is very, very detrimental to our health, our mental health, physical health, spiritual health, to suppress and to shut down and distort our emotions in order to fit in, to be appropriate in my environment. Don't know if you've ever tried to have a relationship, a really close, intimate relationship with someone whose emotions are very shut down. You know, it's really, really working with and developing other skills in order to live with or find the intimate platform where you can meet. And that's where, again, I have learned an enormous amount about myself and how I feel emotionally healthy with others and with myself. So there's something called self-regulation, emotional regulation. These are all things that you can investigate for yourself, because we've got such a short time here. So I'm really just opening up possibilities for you to have a look at. But self-regulation or emotional regulation is basically taking the power into your own hands. Not being vulnerable or directed on how you can be in this situation, and but how you want to be in this situation. So it's reclaiming your power, and at the same time being incredibly kind and compassionate with the self when there's a very strong emotion happening. I remember. Was very, very close to my parents. They were really great friends to me in my older years, especially as I got to know myself better and met them on a more adult, mature way than just the adult child still trying to get the love and acceptance and approval of my parents. But because they became more vulnerable as they got older, and my Dad died at 96, my mother 92. So we had plenty of time. But when you give your heart to someone or you open up, you can become very emotionally vulnerable without knowing it until suddenly they're not there. And I remember I was overseas when my mum had cancer, but she was managing really well. And I came back and she died the morning after I came back. In palliative care, where she had just gone into, she died basically in my arms, in a kind of a cliche sort of a way, but it was. And then I had my dad for about 3 years after that, and was his main carer. But I think one of the greatest griefs for me was when I had to sell the house that my dad had built and that I grew up in. And I remember being in the back garden. When the removalist was basically throwing a lot of their stuff on the back of a truck to take to the tip. And I stood in the back garden and I howled to the sky. all this emotion came up in me. It was like emotion that had been trapped in there for quite some time. And I howled, but in there was still a part of me that didn't want my brother-in-law and my best friend and my and this man putting all the stuff on the truck to hear me. It was such a private moment, but I remember howling to the sky at this loss of this house and my parents and the tsunami of emotion that came up in me, and I just let it out. And I remember packing up their house in the nighttime, like 1 o'clock in the morning, and being there on my own, packing up boxes and doing lots of shredding. And I remember hearing this noise. It sounded like a kind of a wounded animal, like a wolf or something. And I realized it was me crying. And during that time, I let out so much emotion, especially around my mother. I'd be driving the car and I'd be howling. And I realized when this tsunami of emotion passed, how important it was that I got it out, because they say this is where cancer can often come, when there's locked emotion that hasn't, of grief especially. Grief is something we all carry for various reasons, and the emotion has to be let out. But if I had been in aisle two of a supermarket and let that out there, this huge tsunami of emotion, I think they would have rung an ambulance and I would have been sedated and the emotion would have been put down because of the community, the society we live in. And it's only understandable. People get very, very unsettled and very concerned when there's too much human emotion released in an inappropriate environment with an inappropriate person. To an inappropriate extent. So it is a lot about regulating who I'm revealing this emotion to. Where am I revealing this emotion? And is it appropriate or making me more vulnerable? But I think that was the depth of my grief. Okay, I've been rejected as an artist many, many times when I've laid my vulnerable self on the line in an audition, desperately wanting this job, not just because I love my profession as an actor so much and felt very privileged to be representing humanity as an actor, but also because I needed the job for survival, for financial survival. And so when there's a need there, when I'm needy, become very, very vulnerable, emotionally vulnerable. I give away a lot of my power when I'm needy, and then my emotions become very unpredictable and very, very a weakened state. Whereas a powerful emotion, a passion, can be such an inspirational, emotive experience for other people, to give them permission to also feel and to release their own humanness. But I also have to be kind to myself when this is happening. I have to have great compassion when I'm feeling a particular emotion. Self-compassion is a beautiful concept. And I did a course in it with Christina Neff, who developed this whole notion of self-compassion. And really to be put your hand on your heart and on a part of your anatomy that you feel, like your stomach or your solar plexus, and say, I am safe, I am protected, I am loved. I am safe, I am protected, I am loved. It's a very powerful, nurturing experience for the self, by the self, with the self. And this can happen even mentally when you're confronted by an emotional experience with someone else, who is flooding you with their emotion, and you start to feel like your feet are dangling on the ground, off the ground, because you're losing a little bit of yourself in them. And to even say in your mind, just quietly hold your hands, cross your arms, whatever makes you feel nurtured, and say in your mind while they're going at you, I am safe, I am protected, I am loved. That safety, that protection, that love is coming from the self, looking after and caring for the self. So I remember when I was doing quite a bit of corporate work around developing creativity and innovation in with teams, because creativity is was one of my key interests, and it was a fascinating thing to work with people that were creatively blocked, and a lot of those the creative and innovative blocks that we have are stuck emotions that we've put down, we've suppressed, a lack of trust with those around me. And I've spoken about grief, but fear is another significant emotion that we tend to harness, compress, and trap. And in the creative and innovative process, which is something we are so called for in the times that we are in at the moment, with this virus that has swept the world and the shifting sands of our lives, we are really being called to be more creative and innovative in order to set ourselves free into the future, set ourselves free into all the possibilities that are being offered to us but we can't see because of fear. There's a wonderful South American psychologist called Moreno, M-O-R-E-N-O, and he wrote a wonderful paper, which developed into a book called Who Shall Survive? And he talked a lot about the canon of creativity, and that spontaneity, which is so important for creativity and leading to a new outcome, new possibilities. We start off with an idea, and we have this destination for that idea, which will evolve wonderful new possibilities. Suddenly fear comes in, or emotions associated with fear, and bang, the spontaneity is blocked, is suppressed, is absolutely shattered, and we go right back to the beginning again. So spontaneity is really, and in innovation, is so suppressed and distorted by fear. So fear is another huge emotion that we are being made small by in these times that we're in. I mean, fear, you know, it's like all things, we have which side of the coin it is. Fear was a wonderful, wonderful emotion to protect us. The fight, the flight, the whole, should I get out of here because there's a fearful experience. I need to listen to this fear. But see, that's the difference. Is fear being done to me, or am I learning from this experience of fear? And this is going back to what I said at the beginning, is this is where we can learn about ourselves, return home to ourselves by going, is this fear appropriate at this time? So these are the questions we can ask ourselves in order to become stronger, wiser, and more manageable around our emotional self. We can raise that emotion to a greater strength when I observe it. I ask myself questions, is this emotion necessary? But to do that, I have to put the pause button on. Now, I've been in the middle of an argument with someone that I love, and it's been gathering speed and pace, like I said about the rolling stone gathering moss. And so I had to put the pause button on, and I said, can we just put the pause button on here? Because I don't know anymore what we're talking about. I don't know why we're getting to this point, and I have to try and understand it. And by putting that pause button on, it just broke the momentum that we were on. And we both took a breath and kind of went, yeah, well, I don't know either. I said, okay, can we just take a pause here? Let's get a, you know, let's make a cup of something and sit down and talk about this. Or just trying to change the momentum in some way. And I hope you're getting the thread of what it is I'm suggesting here. Emotions are very, very important. There's Daniel Goleman created emotional intelligence, which I'm sure you've all heard about, and it's swept the world, this whole notion of EQ, emotional intelligence, being intelligent around your emotions. And there's all the stages of, you know, being aware of your emotions and how you are in the public arena with your emotions. And you can, the internet is flooded with information about emotional intelligence. But if we bring it right back down to basics, and simplify, we have a tendency as human beings to complicate things so much. We feel that if it's complex or complicated, it's of more value. But I believe the times that we're in now are definitely asking us to simplify our emotions, come back to the still place at the eye of the storm of emotion. The we all know that at the very epicenter of a hurricane, of a tornado, is a very still, silent place. It's nothing. There's all this chaotic energy all around us. And that still, silent place, there's everything is at one. So in the chaotic storm of emotion that we all experience as human beings at different times, see if we can simplify. And it takes practice over a period of time. I've experienced, I mean, this is a beautiful thing about getting older, is that you learn to hopefully start to let go of things that aren't really all that important anymore. You start clearing out stuff, not just physical stuff, but the stuff we've hoarded inside ourselves that make us emotionally impacted, emotionally cluttered, and emotionally inappropriate at times because we're jammed. So to continue to check with the self, how am I going? Is there anything I can just do in this situation to uncomplicate it, untangle it? Whether it's a relationship that I'm in, whether it's a work environment, whether it's how my thinking is, if I can start to clear the landscape of my mind, I can start to see a way forward out of difficult situations like the one that we're in now globally, to find that simplicity, that eye of the storm in the collective chaos, because I can be so affected by the emotions of others. I can be feeling really good in myself, really quite tranquil, in command of my environment, my circumstances, and suddenly I watch the news or I read something or someone, a friend rings up and tells me something and I find myself going, oh no. For some reason, that tends to be my key phase into my emotional cache. Oh no. Oh, physically, then it becomes physical. Oh no. Oh, grab the heart or just go numb, just go quiet, or the tears start flowing. So the emotions of others has a huge impact on me, especially we have something called mirror neurons, which means that there's a part of our brain that can mirror others. Goes back to what I was saying, I suppose, at the beginning about we're voyeurs and we learn by watching the environment around us of our, you know, our significant others or our culture or my religion I'm influenced by. But the mirror neurons in the brain can mirror in myself the emotions, feelings and responses of others. And then I can get, and they suddenly become okay, which is often happens is that, you know, you become the vessel, the conduit, the vehicle to take on their emotion. And then they feel so much better and they go, I feel so much better now, you know, thank you. Or they've vented all their anger on you and feel so much better having unloaded all this stuff on you, and you're kind of devastated or weakened because of taking that on. So again, there has to be that self-regulation. What am I prepared to take on, and how do I protect myself? And there's a lot of different processes for that. Again, it's that self-compassion, how I can reassure myself that I am safe, I am protected, I am loved. And I have to trust myself in that way, because in the past, I may not have protected myself as I should have or would have liked. So have I lost trust with myself because I wasn't there for myself in significant moments with others or with my circumstances. So I have to learn to repair that relationship with myself and ask the emotion when it rises up, is this necessary, or is this level of emotion necessary, or what is it that you're trying to tell me? Why are you feeling this? I went for a walk the other day and I was feeling a bit overwhelmed by the circumstances, by, I don't know, I felt kind of a bit low, I suppose, by this lockdown that we're in here in Melbourne. And I felt that I had to sort of get myself out of this and lift myself up. And I started observing the emotion and the physical response, the heaviness I felt in my solar plexus, and the feeling that I didn't want to be feeling like this. But then something in my mind, and this is where walking can be a beautiful release to actually physically do something different. In my mind, I said to myself, it's okay. It's okay to feel this. You're all right. Just ride it through. Don't have to understand it. Don't get complicated with it. It just is. You just feel like this. There might be a reason behind it. You don't necessarily need to know. Feel it, go into it, experience it like I did with the crying about my parents. I went really into it and I didn't get cancer out of it, you know, touch wood. So hopefully I long may that last, but I didn't. I released it and felt so much more over in the coming year. I felt I had expressed my emotions as much as I possibly could at that point in time. And then giving myself permission when I was walking the other day to feel what I felt, giving myself permission to feel the grief that I felt, then I can gradually, over a period of time, start to understand what was behind that emotion. I think the negative emotions are the ones I've been speaking about mostly, because the joyous ones, the emotions of happiness, the emotions of optimism, the emotions of celebration, you know, we welcome those in, although they too need to be regulated according to my environment. I have sometimes felt this great surge of happiness coming through myself, because I tend to be an optimistic person and I prefer to feel joy than deep sorrow or anger. I'm not good with anger. I find it a bit challenging, anger in others or anger in myself, because the power of it can be misdirected. But I've noticed that when, especially at the moment when people are very challenged by this coronavirus situation, I have to monitor my happiness, because it's not appropriate. Others can feel very disturbed, disrespected, just annoyed by that, you know, a bubble of happiness. And yet other times, if I read the situation right, it can really help uplift. If I create the art of emotion, and it is an art, emotional experiences, the give and take of emotion is definitely an art that we can all learn. But we have to go into the self, experience it with the self, learn from it. Reading about it is very important. Getting professional help around out-of-control emotions is very important. Anger management, talk to someone about it. You know, so I think therapy around emotions that have become out of control is crucial, because they can become very excessive and violent or destructive and cruel. So we do really need to monitor those and seek help where necessary. But my default button tends to go back to one of joy, of deep appreciation of being in this life. And I think the shadow side, the light side, it's all beautiful and important in itself, in the myriad experience of being a human being in this journey of life. So there's so much to cover. It's such a vast, vast living force within all of us, our emotional selves. I could continue. There's going to be wonderful questions or insights, comments, even coming from you. It doesn't have to be a question. It can be an insight of your own, some wisdom I can learn from. So let's just finish up with a small relaxation, contemplation, inner journey in the last few minutes together. So you can close your eyes during this experience if you like. You can just lower your eyes. So you go into a private place, a personal place, where there's an intimate connection with the self, your beautiful self, your whole self, your healing self, complete self. It's a lovely, lovely place to dive into. If I'm physically comfortable where I'm sitting, can feel safe where I am in my environment. Comfortable. I'm here with myself, experiencing my breath, the beautiful rhythm of a life, the breath moving gently in and out, the very source of my emotion is my breath, who I am in this world, how I am in this world. Is expressed through the rhythm, the music of my breath. Gentle, natural flow of my breath stills my heart, cools my mind. My breath is my guide. My breath is the map that leads me. My breath, the gentle flow of my breath, is like a little boat that sails on a calm sea into the epicenter, the silent, still place deep within myself, the silent, still place within the storm, a place I can return to and feel safe, protected and loved. In this silent, still place within myself, I see all things. I know all things. I realign with my light-filled, uncomplicated self, sitting quietly in the epicenter of myself, the gentle breeze of my breath, calming me, soothing me, reconnecting me to the powerful energy that is me. The place where I decide how I am in this world. Where I belong in this world is in my control, is in my hands, knowing I am safe, I am protected, I am loved by my deep, deep inner beauty, inner stillness, simplicity, the simplicity that lies within me, where I reconnect, become one with myself in this world. I can return to this place whenever I choose, in 1 second. It is always here for me. With one thought, I can turn my mind to this silent, still place within myself. At one, with one, with my beautiful, peaceful, powerful self. My breath guides me there. My breath fills the sails of my life, the life force that carries me through this life. My breath, my beautiful breath, my monitor for who I am and how I am, is the voice I listen to. It is my truth, and I never let go of it. I hold it like a jewel, always close. So, thank you.
Thank you, Chrissy. Wow, it sounds like you've got, I don't know if it's our end or your end. I don't think it's our end. It sounds like you've got someone doing DIY at 4 a.m. at your end.
I know, I heard it as well. I think it's a possum on the roof.
A possum? Oh, wow, okay.
We have what are called ring-tailed possums around here because they're a native. They're like a small kangaroo almost. And they are a marsupial. They have a little pouch like the kangaroo does. And I think it's busy in the roof. So I do apologize.
That's it.
it was a great experience for me to have to go beyond sound. I thought,
well, I thought, wow, you've got enthusiastic neighbours or someone in the house, but if it's impossible, well, it must be your meditation. It's enthusiasm.
I wasn't sure if you could hear it or only I could hear it, but it is definitely busy creating some space for itself, I think. I have to get the brick and knock on the wall on the ceiling.
Well, it's probably found itself a nice, peaceful place. And so it's
It was an interesting juxtaposition, I felt, that that there was always stuff going on around us. Yeah. And we put our mind in what is going on around us and outside, or stay in that place. And so I found it an opportunity for me to stay and not be so easily drawn out by what is happening around me
and why it's
happening. In that I lose myself. So I kind of was I was talking about silence at one stage, and I did feel it in myself, but there was this kind of noise around me, which is about life.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a wonderful it was a wonderful offering, really, to say, well, you think you can sit quietly? Well, you'll have to delve deeper and find that place, because there's all this noise and chaos around me. So anyway.
Well, I'm glad you didn't choreograph it.
I promise you I didn't.
Okay.
As long as it doesn't fall through the roof.
Oh, well, no, it doesn't, for your sake. Because I know it's eaves up there, so yes, it's not like there's a floor between you and the possum in that sense.
That's right, but there's a roof. There's a sort of like the corridor. There's a space, and then there's the, you know, because it's a cathedral ceiling.
Oh wow, so. Wow! All right, so let me get these questions to you.
Yes, I'd love to hear them.
Okay, so there's quite a few very deep emotional stuff. People are being very vulnerable, which is very kind.
Thank you.
How to let go of guilt of things that have been said or not said to loved ones who've passed away?
That is a universal question that we all ask ourselves at different times, because guilt and shame lie very deeply inside us all for various reasons. Some are necessary, some are we could let go of, but we hold on to. And guilt and shame, I think there has to be enormous effort made for self-forgiveness, for forgiving the other. When I was studying conflict resolution and mediation in my master's degree, forgiveness came up a lot, because in inner conflict or conflict with others and what has happened to us in the past or what we've done to others in the past can create enormous pain and suffering. And so there was an amazing movement towards forgiveness in South Africa. With the apartheid movement. And I think that if we can find some processes of forgiveness for self, kindness towards the self, processes of forgiveness towards those that have we have either violated or have been violated by, it's a very high state of mind is forgiveness. And when those people have passed, then it makes it harder, because you can't go to them and say, I'm sorry, or please forgive me, or this is why I was like that back then. And so I think ritual becomes a very important and powerful process of some kind here. I remember being at a retreat once and running a retreat, facilitating this, and somebody came to me and in the break and revealed this great sorrow that they had around someone that had passed on. And so what we did was we later, after the retreat finished, and we took some time, and I sat with her and we talked about it and agreed that it would be good if she wrote this person a letter. And the next day we would have a little gathering of some of us would meet in the garden and we would bury it like a little funeral in a way. So she chose a part of the garden around this retreat center and she wrote this letter in the evening, put it in an envelope, maybe put some little flowers in the envelope with it, things, rituals that made her feel good and made her feel a completion was happening, and then did a little ceremony in the garden, buried it in the ground, put a beautiful thing over the top of it and some flowers, like a little funeral. And sometimes people will do the same thing but put it in the fire and burn it as an offering and cleanse by the flames. So ritual can be a wonderful thing like that. Might be something that you do by the sea. But nature is a great healer around this shame and guilt, and speaking it out loud in a place like in nature, having a conversation out loud, hearing yourself voice the things that you wished you'd said and could have said and should have said, or through a letter, but some form of communication. Don't underestimate the power of that crossing over into to those that have passed on. Don't underestimate the capacity to connect and settle that energy between you. Hope that helps.
Wow, thank you. Yes,
I think the healing begins with asking the question already.
Wow.
You've already asked the question, mm-hmm. So you've gone a long way already into healing that guilt and shame. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. The next question is, could you briefly run us through processing a wild and ravenous heartbreak in a healthy way, please, including sitting with your pain to make sure we're not burying the trauma, resentment, and regret that will haunt us later?
Wow. Did you say a ravenous situation?
Yes.
Can you say that again, Auntie, that beginning bit?
Could you briefly run us through processing a wild and ravenous heartbreak?
Wow. I don't think there is an instant formula, recipe for something as deeply emotional, sort of traumatic in a way, experience like a heartbreak. That can take time, and time can be a great balm if we use it well or if we don't use it well. You know, life has a great capacity to heal, to soothe the passing of time, and to remember that life is on your side. It's not here to destroy you, to harm you, to hurt you. Life is here to teach you, to help you evolve into who you are, into a more powerful, more wiser person. You don't wake up wise. You earn the right for it. And these very strong experiences that come to us in our life it can be a gift if we see it like that. If we become the alchemist of our life, where we turn lead, you know, dirty old horrible things into something precious, like this experience we're all going through at the moment, it can be the worst, most negative, most traumatic experience of my life, or it can be an opportunity to grow, to learn. But when the heart is broken, and we revisit it again and again and go over it, and should I have said, and could I have said, and imagine what could have been if this had gone well. You know, we kind of can hurt ourselves more than that situation, that person, that event that broke our heart. we can hurt ourselves more by going over it and over it, like picking a scab off, you know, opening a wound. So it's sometimes we do need the guidance, a professional guidance or a course or, you know, alternative ways of dealing with this. But I think it's shifting the intention from feeling, how do I overcome this, to seeing it as a great opportunity for coming back to myself, asking the questions of the self, why did it affect me so deeply? What was it that hurt me so much? Why, what did I lose? What did I feel I lost? What had I hoped for? It's kind of having a conversation with the self of inquiry. What, and then a healing, an empowering inquiry around, well, what have I learned from this? How have I, is there one small thing that I have gathered strength from this? I think heartbreak and loss, especially in a relationship, can sometimes be grieving for the part of the self I lost in that relationship or in that event. I lost myself, and I didn't represent myself as I could have or should have. I think the heartbreak also comes from some of that loss of connection to the self. And so to find ways of, again, of being kind and compassionate to the self, of doing processes around self-forgiveness and kindness, and if developing healthy emotions of appreciation for this happening in my life that I can learn from, grow from, reconnect to that part of myself that was broken and I have lost. I'll never be the same again, and I don't want to be the same again, because from now on I am wiser, I am experienced. That's what, as an older person, you people will gather around you because you have got life stories and experiences that you have evolved out of. And that's what the future will be. The future will be the choices that you make now of how to care for this broken part. And how would you do that if this was a best friend of yours, someone you loved, someone who's very, very close to you and they've got a broken heart? How would you care for them? What would you say? That's what you do for yourself. Yeah, self-care and compassion, forgiveness of that part of you that was broken, and evolve it into something far greater, far wiser and more powerful. Reclaiming the self. It's not an easy journey. Wisdom isn't easily got, but it's a gift. It doesn't might seem like it, but it is, and you're not alone in it. Yeah, some wonderful, wonderful information out there, courses, people, support, but I'd give yourself a go first of asking, inquiring, go into the darkness, go into the depths of it, and come out of it with the wise, all-knowing, experienced self that sees it as a gift. It's what I've done.
Thank you. There are a number of questions, but we are really out of time. But I will ask you this one last question. I don't know how you'll answer it so quickly, but I'm going to put it to you. Thank you for your great advice. My question is, how do you get more in touch with your emotions and get better at understanding and managing your feelings?
It's again coming back to the same thing that I have been saying since the beginning, is the journey back home to the self. The self, the original, my self, who I am, beyond the influences that life and experiences and circumstances have brought me. This is what contemplation does, or meditation, or being with the self, return, taking time or opportunities to be with yourself. It's just, even if it's only a short time, or you get up a little bit earlier, or you stay up a little bit later at night and sit with the self, go walking with the self. And with emotion, as you get to be more with yourself in a deliberate way, in a conscious way, when you start to feel emotions coming up, you will be there for yourself. You will experience these emotions at the beginning of them, not once you're in them and they're a tsunami that you're absolutely drenched in, but they will be there in a small form first. It's like you hear something in the distance coming, like the hooves of the horses, or you hear this possum kind of, we should have heard it, you know, thundering across the roof first. You hear it coming first, but if you listen to that emotion that's starting to, you'll feel it in your body, the physical response, in your breath. Your breath will start to change. When you're fearful, as an actor, I would go into breath to change the emotion of the character I'm playing. When a child is getting overly emotional, you'll say, okay, take a deep breath. Come on, take a breath, or calm down, take a breath. All right, just breathe. And so you'll notice it in a physical sense. You'll notice tension. You'll notice your breath is changing. And you'll sense this emotion, especially if it's a familiar one. You go, oh, no, here, you know, it's coming. Then it's like the pause button that I was saying before. You can actually observe it. That's where the power lies, in observing it before it takes you over, in observing the emotion that's building in someone else before it's become a tsunami. That's when you have to go back into that silent, still place of the self to reclaim. Whether or not you just go off to the toilet for a minute and stand there and get yourself back into yourself. But the power is in sensing it. And the only way that will happen is when you get to know yourself and how to protect yourself before it actually happens to you. And so, but when it happens, okay, it's happened. You have to find a shift. You have to find an opportunity, whether it's just looking down, saying, I just need to go to the toilet, or I've got to get something out of the car, or you see yourself getting emotional with someone else and you break it, either through a shift, physical shift, or a mental shift of self-observation. Go back into the self, reclaim the self, and go, okay. Because when you're standing there, what's going on in your mind, okay, it might be reflected in your eyes. That's another conversation. It will be definitely be reflected in your vibrational energy. When you're angry, it feeds anger. When you're calm, it brings a calmness to the volatile situation that you're in. But it's reclaiming the self, taking power over the self, and choosing, what do I want to be here? But seeing it coming, feel it coming, sensing it before it actually overwhelms you and you're in the stampede of it. Hear the hooves coming in the distance, in yourself or in others around you, and reclaim it. But it takes practice, because we're so used to, we've got such a habit of being overwhelmed by the emotion of others. Triggers happen, you see. Something triggers. Someone will say something. Someone will give you a look. Something will happen and you go, bang, you're into it. So it's knowing your triggers, knowing what it is that triggers me off. What are the triggers in the other person that I know if I go there, it's going to trigger? So this is, again, reclaiming the power, reclaiming a sense of knowing by self-observation, know what my triggers are, know what the triggers are in others, and start to reconfigure them, empower them, harness them. Okay, so.
Wow. Gosh, I'm going to put the pause button on for a moment. That was incredible. I think this is one of those talks I'm going to go back and listen to again, because there were so many things that you gave us as tools that would make it very, very possible for us to not just simply manage, but to really boost our sense of well-being, particularly in today's situations that we're dealing with.
Mm.
I would like to say thank you all. You've been an amazing audience joining us this evening. Thank you very much for sharing.
It's a pleasure.